Welcome to Careertools. This week, how to connect people. The questions this cast answers are, how do I put two of my contacts in touch with one another? Should I ask people if they want to be connected to one another? And how long should I remain in the conversation when I'm connecting people? Sarah, how many times have we mentioned network on Careertools casts?
I would say that we've mentioned networking millions of times. Relationships are the only thing we ever talk about on our cast.
That's true. I thought you were going to say 11 billion.
11 billion.
It might be that many. Having a network is really important when you want to progress in your career because it's having a network that gives you the opportunities to advance in your career. And as we said before, you need to be giving in order to get results from your network. And connecting people you know, but who don't know each other, when they can be helpful to each other, is an important way of giving back to your network, of giving the favors that mean that you'll hear about the opportunities that you want to hear about. So today we're going to talk about how.
All right. So our outline for today's cast is, number one, don't ask first. Number two, get out fast. And then mind the volume.
So I think number one is going to be controversial.
Don't ask first. When you connect to people that you trust, who trust you enough to be part of your network, you don't need to ask them before you connect them. It seems like the polite thing to do. It just slows things down and it really doesn't add any value to the entire thing. So let's try a quick thought experiment to show why asking first is really unnecessary. So first, let's assume that you're going to ask. So here are the steps. John first asks you if you know anyone that can help with this complex iOS design problem.
And you tell him you'll introduce him to Jane, but you need to check with her first. You need to check with her that it's okay to give John her details.
So then you turn around and ask Jane if she minds talking to John and steering him in the right direction.
And Jane trusts you, and John is also a trusted contact of yours. So, of course, Jane says yes.
Of course she says yes. So then you send an email introducing them. At that point, you get out of the conversation.
So in the end, we ended up with five steps there. And really, the only important step is the bit where we said, Jane is your trusted contact, and so is John. And so, of course, Jane says yes. I mean, you can be absolutely sure that Jane is going to say yes, so you don't need to ask her. You can skip every step except the last one. So if you feel uncertain about this, I'm going to try another thought experiment and try and explain it. So let's see. Belinda asked John if he has a contact who could help her with her conditional formatting problem. Now, let's say you're the person who knows everything about conditional formatting. So you get an email from John copying Belinda saying, hey, Belinda has a problem with conditional formatting and I thought you'd be able to help. Now, if you received that email, would you help or not? Of course you would. And it's not the fact that Belinda is copied that makes you feel like you ought to help. It's the fact that John asks you because you trust John. And so you trust him that he is asking something reasonable of you, that he is doing it in good faith, that Belinda is a person who's worth helping. And you guess all of that stuff from your relationship with John. Even if you say, look, I'm sorry, this is above my school level. Have you tried asking Harry? I can get you two in contact if you want me to. So essentially, you've said no to the request. Even if you say that, you still didn't need to be asked. Right? You didn't need to put John in the position of being the messenger between the two of you. You can go straight to the two people who need to be connected talking to one another.
And basically, if you are CCing that individual, you are, in my definition, not asking permission. Right? You're kind of backdoor hooking them up without asking permission first. So it's really just an extra step that's unnecessary. And there's something else here too. So when John asks you to help Belinda without asking in advance, he demonstrates his trust in you. So he trusts that you're going to do your best to help Belinda, that you're not going to blow her off or give her false information. And this demonstration of trust is John further investing in your relationship. Anytime that you trust someone else in the same way, you're investing too. So really, no need to ask.
Yeah. It's a bit like they say love is a verb. And if you're going to love someone, then you have to show them by doing things for them. Otherwise, you know, if you never say it or you just keep it inside and you never demonstrate it, it's really not there. And trust is a bit that way too. If you say, I trust someone, but never do something that demonstrates your trust in them, then essentially you don't trust them, or to their mind or their evidence, the evidence for them, they don't know that you actually do trust them. And so you have to do these exercises in trust. You have to demonstrate the trust in order for the person that you're working with to really understand that it's there and to feel that it's there. And it feels a bit emotional and touchy-feely, but that's the only way to explain trust, because it really happens between two people.
Right. So number two is get out fast. So now that we know that we're only going to send that one email, what should that one email say? Well, it can be short and sweet. The aim of the email really is to connect those two people, not give a thorough biography of that other individual. So when you're joining two people who both trust you, you don't need to get into all of those additional details.
Like why somebody is good for you to be helping you, or what they've done that proves that they're good at helping you. All of those things don't really matter, because both sides trust you, and they therefore trust you are making a good connection for them.
Right. It's like if you're going to have a high school intern at your office and the child's parents are friends of friends. So would you first ask for a bio, including all of the times that that kid has ever seen a principal?
And the answer is no, because you know a lot about that kid. You know everything you need to know from the fact that his parents are friends with friends of yours. You know, we trust that people who we think are good people raise good kids. And, you know, every teenager has their moment. But the fact that that child comes from that family tells you everything you need to know. You don't need a bio. You don't need to know that the child's been tardy 15 times this year. You know, it might be tardy for you, but that's part of the learning that kids do at internships. So it doesn't matter. And so you trust the people, your friends, they trust their friends, and their friends have a child, and you automatically trust that child too. In other circumstances, in the opposite circumstances, where there's someone you have no knowledge of, you always want a resume, right?
Right. Before the Industrial Revolution, there were no resumes, because everyone that you hired was a personal recommendation. But once people began to mix economically with people that they didn't know personally, resumes became important. You're making the personal recommendation for both of these people in this case, so the biography isn't required as it would be if you were applying for a job.
Exactly. So if you imagine back before the Industrial Revolution and, you know, somebody was going to go and work on somebody's farm, that person, they were probably already known to each other. They probably had grown up together. They'd known each other all their lives. And so there was no need for a resume. They just knew each other. And whether or not somebody was a hard worker or was on the drink or whatever, that was already known.
Mm-hmm.
And then when people started to spread out a bit, then you did need resumes and references, because two people might know each other and want to hire a third, but only one of the people knew. So it's a kind of triangle, right? You've got the employer at one end, the referrer at the other, and the person who's going to be employed in the middle. And in order to make the connection across from the person who's got the job and the person who's referring, you had to have a piece of paper to bridge that gap, because there was no personal knowledge. This is all how this trust kind of works. It's the same with banknotes. The banknotes in the US, I think, say "In God We Trust." In the UK, it's something about the bank promises to pay the bearer of, which means that if I have a £10 note and I give it to Sarah, the bank has guaranteed that she will get that value, even though it's just a piece of paper. And so there's a trust there. You're trusting that the bank will give you the value of that piece of paper. And every time there's trust, there's two people who trust each other and know each other through a third party, you don't need a lot of information about that person. So that's why your email can be super short, because you don't need to give this huge bio.
Right. We just have to tell the two people why we're connecting them. So it should sound something like, "Anne, I want you to meet my friend Mike. You guys need to talk about power engineering." Or, "Anne, you and my friend Mike have a common passion for agile planning. I think that the two of you could help one another." Or, "Anne, I think my friend Mike will be able to help you with your exhaust problem. He's a genius at that stuff."
And then you get out of the conversation, because there's nothing more you need to do. Two professionals, once introduced, can take it from there, and you're not going to add value by continuing to facilitate that conversation. It's like what happens at a party, right, Sarah?
Yes, absolutely. If I'm talking to two people, I, for example, know a mechanical engineer, let's say they work at SpaceX, and I have got a friend that also maybe is, I don't know, in aeronautics, somewhat similar fields. And I know these two individuals, so the three of us are having a discussion. At that point in time, I would eject myself from the conversation, because what they have in common and what they are discussing has got nothing to do with the subject matter, the knowledge I've got. I am just an extra person hanging around, awkwardly listening in on a conversation that I know nothing about.
That you don't even understand. If it's me in mechanical engineering, I have no clue.
Over my head.
Exactly. It's kind of creepy if you think about introducing two people who have a subject in common. You know nothing about it, and you're just standing there listening. And that's kind of what it's like when you're reading an email conversation between two people. There's something really strange about reading other people's emails when they're talking to a third person. So if you can imagine that awkwardness at a party, you staying in that email loop is the same kind of awkwardness. It's just kind of weird. And so it's fine for you to say, "Hey, Anne, I want you to meet my friend Mark. You guys need to talk about power engineering. I've introduced you, now I'm out." I usually say something like, "I'm sure you could carry on the conversation without me," or "feel free to carry on the conversation without me," because I don't want them to feel like they have to keep copying me and have me. Right. They don't have to have me in the conversation that I really can't contribute to anymore.
Right. Then you're just that hanger on, and everyone knows you're in the conversation, but doesn't really know what you have to do with it. So who do you talk to? It's kind of, it's an awkward conversation.
Yeah.
Very awkward.
So our last one is mind the volume. And if you know about the London Underground, they have a saying, "Mind the gap." So mind the volume means think about the volume of requests or introductions that you're sending to any one person.
Right. We all have a friend who is just absolutely brilliant, who's super smart and can fix any problem and is handsome and well-liked. That's the kind of person that everyone wants to know. So they could be your one go-to resource for pretty much every other contact that you've got.
Right. And you can, I'm sure, work out the problem here is that if you use that person as the contact for every single person that asks you for something, then you are soon going to wear out your welcome.
Absolutely.
And since he's so brilliant, he's probably very professional too, and he's going to do his best to help everyone every time. And then he's going to be so burnt out on contacts from you that even if you're giving favors in return, you're kind of burning that relationship.
Absolutely. That guy is probably the one you want to go to every time. But in some cases, you don't need to go to your most talented contact in whatever that field may be. You can instead refer them to somebody at a slightly lower level than that.
Right. Like if my mom asks me something technical about her computer, I'm not going to send her to Mike, because Mike's a genius and my mom's problem is probably something she can Google. So because she's not great with technology. And so you have to think about, okay, when I'm making these contacts, am I sending it? It's not just about efficiency. It's not about is this the best person because they can answer the question. It's is this the best person because they're at a similar level. In fact, if you send somebody at a low level and you put them in contact with someone at a very high level, it's possible that they'll be completely intimidated and that relationship won't blossom at all. So you have to think about that at the same time as thinking, when you're thinking about who's best, think about the levels that they're at, the level of experience, the kind of companies they work in, those kind of things, as well as do they have the technical knowledge that I want to connect this person with?
Right. So while we're connecting people, a valuable part of that is working on our network. We do have to be careful to send not all the traffic in one direction. Sometimes they don't need your best contact because they haven't reached that level. Sometimes you need to put more back in before you can take out more from that particular contact.
Yeah, and sometimes you just can't make the connection at all because that line is exhausted. And it depends on why you're making contacts. We're assuming here that you're putting people in contact because one of them can help the other. But if you have your brilliant friend and the contacts you've been putting him in contact with are all things that will benefit him, then clearly you're not exhausting it in the same way. So if he's brilliant and you've put him in touch with the CEO of a company who wants to hire him for a C-suite job, and you've put him in touch with somebody at the country club who got him a massive discount, and you've put him in touch with someone at the private school where he wants to send his kids who can give him a referral, then that's not exhausting that line, even though it's one person in the middle of all those contacts. It's when you only send that person people who need him or need her help that the line becomes exhausted.
Absolutely. So putting people in contact with one another, it's a valuable service that you perform with your network. It can be quick and easy, though, and it can be done far more often than we ever think to do it. You just need to be a little bit careful about wearing out your welcome with one single person.
Yeah. Well, we'd love to hear your success stories. Post them on the forums. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you, Wendy.
Bye, everyone. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week.
If you enjoyed this podcast and you want the how-tos of management wherever you are, check out the free Manager Tools mobile app. It's available on both iOS and Android devices. Go to the Apple Store or the Google Play Store and download the Manager Tools app. Just search for Manager Tools in the respective store, or go to the Manager Tools website, www.manager-tools.com, and you'll find the links on the bottom of the homepage. Once you've installed the Manager Tools app, you'll have access to all the Manager Tools and Career Tools shows anytime, anywhere you want. With easy searching of podcasts by category, using the map of the universe, or using built-in search functions, it couldn't be easier. Additionally, if you're Manager Tools personal licensee, you'll have easy access to all the show notes right from the app whenever you want. Go to the App Store and download the Manager Tools mobile app. You'll be happy you did.